Oh man, you know, two very contrasting pictures, right? I mean, we have Peter Gabriel, right? If you remember the 80s, those of you who were alive then, it's like, you know, look into your eyes, the intimacy, the connection, eighth grade dances, remember eighth grade dances? I mean, it's all about the physical connection. And then of course we have this great scene from Modern Family that, you know, really depicts probably more of what our lives look like today. We're connected on all these fronts and using technology. And so, you know, we live in a busy, noisy, you know, fast-paced, information-filled world, and it seems that we're more and more connected than we've ever been before through smartphones and devices and all these things, and yet research continues to show that we're actually less and less connected than we've ever been before. And so today, I want us to think about, you know, this in terms of our relationships, but more specifically, our romantic relationships, our us, our dating relationships, our engagements, our marriages, or possibly even our future relationships. And so, you know, as we've been saying through the series, you know, whether you're married, single, divorced, single again, whether you're in love, hoping to be in love, you know, one day you want to be in love or you just have these ideas of love. I mean, we're really excited you're here because we believe these are things that are critically important as we think about these kinds of relationships. And my name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to meet you this morning if it's the first time you're here with us today. And, you know, if your life is at all like our lives and our family, my wife and I, Julie, I mean, we're just kind of ordinary people trying to figure out this adventure of life and trying to stay on top of it. And yet, it's amazing how much focus and how much attention we have to give to staying connected and really present in our marriage all the time, every single day. And it's not because we have massive differences, though we've certainly had those at times. And it's not even because we have these, you know, major conflicts of interest, though we certainly, you know, run across those at times. It's because we own smartphones and tablets and devices. And, you know, we have things that make our life easier on so many fronts. And we were both professionals. And, you know, we use these to do our work and to stay engaged and connected with our kids. We have four kids, 15, 14, 11, and 8. And they're very active and engaged. I added up in my head this week. I think we have something like 19 devices in our home between laptops and, you know, school-required iPads and all these different things. And all this to say, we live very busy lives and we're very digitally connected. And so as we look at this today and the impact of technology on our relationships, I don't want us to see technology as the bad guy, all right? Because, I mean, we're talking about FaceTime and Instagram and Facebook and photo sharing. I mean, all the things that we use to stay connected in our relationships and in life. But what I do want us to consider today is the ways in which technology and kind of our ever-connected digital lives continue to interfere with or create a wall between the deeper intimacy that we long for and we were actually created for with our spouses. And so Eric Pickersgill, how'd you like to have that name growing up? Eric Pickersgill is a photojournalist. He's an artist. And he did this photo series called Removed that I want to show you. And it's really fascinating. He grew up in North Carolina, lives in North Carolina. He decided to illustrate how tethered people are to their devices. And so as a photographer, he'd actually take one of those big box cameras, his old, you know, early 19th century cameras out into, you know, any community. And when he would see people on their devices standing together, but not connecting with each other, just on their devices, he would go up to them and say, hey, could I take a photo of you right here in that pose? And most people would say yes. So he'd ask them to hold that pose while they were looking at their device or whatever it may be. And then right before he snapped the photo, he would actually remove the devices from their hands. And then this is what began to come out of this. Look at this. You got a couple like sitting here, her head in his lap, and yet they're not connecting at all, right? They're sitting there totally in their own world. Families, you know, checking email, playing video games, you know, like checking news, parents sitting on the couch with their kids, kids sitting on the, I mean, you begin to see these images and they're almost haunting, right? I mean, you're like, oh my word, it's haunting because that's what we look like so much of the time. It's just that the device has been removed. That's why he called the series Removed. And so, you know, it's interesting as we think about this, one of the crazy, crazy things about marriage is how much work it takes. You know, we can live under the same roof, we can parent the same kids, we can even go to sleep in the same bed at night, and yet technology has this tendency, without us even knowing it, has this tendency of interfering with the deeper connection and the communication that we actually long for in our relationships. And so today, I want us to look at Jesus's original intention, God's original intention for the marriage relationship. And then we're going to take a look at some of the ways in which our obsession with technology, social media, all of these fronts actually interferes and robs us of some of the deeper connection. And ask the question, how do we get back to some of that? All right, so if you're married, this is going to be really important for you to kind of just say, okay, what does this mean for my life? If you're dating someone, if you're engaged, if one day you hope to be married, man, students in the room, if you're a student and you one day hope to be married, I'd pay attention to this because you can begin to develop some habits in your life right now. If you're divorced, there may be things that are still a bit raw for you, and yet as we dig into God's intention for the marriage relationship, hopefully you may see that God's intention may be a bit different than even what you experienced in your marriage. And so let's dive into this whole idea of what was God's intention for the deeper intimacy in the marriage relationship. To get that, we have to go all the way back to the beginning. All right, so the story, your story, the story of us actually begins at the dawn of creation. And so we go back to the book of Genesis, and in Genesis we find the creation narrative. All right, this is where God puts, you know, the creation into motion, you know, the 6-7 days of creation. And I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but the first 3 days of the creation narrative, God is separating things. And so he first separates the light from the darkness, and he says it's good. And then he separates the sky from the earth or the land, and he says it's good. And then he separates the land from the waters, and he says it's good. So the first 3 days he separates. And then he goes into population mode. Day 4, he actually brings fish into the seas, and he says it's good. And then he brings the lions, tigers, and bears, oh my, the beasts of the field into the earth, and he says it's good. And then the 6th day is where humankind shows up. And God, it says God created man in his own image. And get this, he changes his verbiage right here. He doesn't say it's good. He says, oh, it's very good. And so he creates humankind. He says it's very good. But then for the very first time in this moment, we hear something come out of God's mouth that's never been voiced before. God says something is not good. Take a look at Genesis chapter 2. It says, the Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. So he says, I will make a suitable helper for him. Now, this is kind of funny. Women, have you ever wondered how you got your label, woman? Have you ever wondered how that name stuck with your gender? Anybody ever wonder that? I think Adam had something to do with it. I think as God was forming you and putting all the beautiful curves and, you know, all the things that make you beautiful, and he placed woman in front of Adam, and Adam just goes, whoa, man. Or maybe it didn't happen that way. I don't know. But I'd like to think that, you know, that's just, that maybe God's like, okay, that's good. That's going to stick. Woman. Whoa, man, woman. Regardless, sometimes we see this passage right here, and women specifically struggle with this. You know, what do you mean a suitable helper? We get hung up on the verbiage right here. You know, in the Hebrew language, there's not a direct translation from the Hebrew into the English all the time. All right. And so really the intended, you know, idea of suitable helper, actually, get this, woman, is this idea of corresponding strength. So God's saying, I want to make a corresponding strength, because it's not good that man is alone. And so the intention of marriage, as God designs it, is this idea of man and woman living together, you know, sharing the joys and the difficulties, the valleys and the hills, the hilltop moments and the difficult moments together, that there's a togetherness in this. All right, and so then we begin to see God give the two specific vows of the marriage relationship, or the covenants of the marriage relationship. And so in Genesis 2, God introduces the leave and cleave principle. All right, and this is where we find the two principles, or the two promises or covenants of the relationship that makes up the marriage relationship. And so here's what it says. It says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother. And so the idea here, some of you have boomerang kids, you know, like they moved out and then they decided to move back in. And you're like, wow, I can't wait till they leave and cleave. You know, well, it's way more than they're just not going to be living under your house roof anymore. All right. He says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave. Or in the version we're looking at today, the ESV, hold fast to. And what does it say there to hold fast to or to cleave onto? It doesn't say to cleave onto your mom still or your dad still or even to cleave onto your devices. What does it say right there? To cleave onto your wife, right? Or to your husband. And so the first promise of the marriage covenant is the promise of loyalty. He says, I want you to leave. I want there to be, it's not just a leaving the home that you grew up in and now living somewhere else. It's way deeper than that. He's saying basically to this point in your human life, your highest level of human commitment has been to your family of origin. But when you get married, there has to be a shifting of that allegiance from your family of origin to the one that you marry. Right? To where everything else pales in comparison. It's the leave and cleave principle. It's the promise of loyalty. Now, the promise of loyalty goes way more than beyond way more than just your family of origin. All right, because see, if you've been single for any time at all, which you have been, or you know, even into your 20s, 30s, you develop patterns. And there's certain things in your singleness that you begin to say, okay, well, I can make decisions and I can choose to do this. And there's things that take priority in your life. And this is saying when you enter that marriage relationship, all of those things have to take a second seat because nothing should compare to your spouse. They need to, the vow of loyalty is that they are above everything else, including things like your job, things like your technology. Right? He's saying this is the promise of loyalty, right? You're to leave and cleave. How many times have we, you know, been in those key major life moments, those defining life moments when, you know, we're more interested in capturing the moment and posting it than actually leaning into the moment in an intimate way with the person we're with? I mean, take a look at this removed photo. I mean, just married and here they are, more interested in posting than actually leaning in. He says, everything else should pale in comparison. It's the promise of loyalty. So therefore, man shall leave his father and mother and cleave or hold fast to his wife and women to their husbands. And then the next path, and they, the two, shall become one flesh. And so the second covenant, the second vow of marriage is the promise of intimacy. See, what was once two is now one. Which means this is an idea, it's like they're more and more together, less and less your stuff is your stuff and her stuff is her stuff. It's like now your stuff is my stuff and your dreams are my dreams and our lives are kind of merging more and more into one. Get this, less and less connected, more and more together and connected intimately. I mean, this whole idea, I mean, if we truly long for deeper intimacy and connection in our marriage, listen, then staying present in our marriage, Staying focused on the relationship right there, maybe some of the most important and diligent work that we do. Again, Eric Pickersgill, he actually kind of documented this in this removed project. He actually, you know, made a video of him and his wife and how this looks so oftentimes for them. Take a look at this.
This is my wife, Angie. And this is me. Angie is in medical school, and I am an artist and graduate student studying photography. Every night, Angie and I fall asleep with each other and our phones. In fact, the very last thing that we're in contact with every night is our cold, illuminated devices.
Think about that. The last thing I'm in contact with every single night is my cold, illuminated device. I want us to consider this morning the unintended impact that technology has on our relationships and how this strikes at the core of the marriage covenants, the vow of intimacy, this idea of less and less alone, more and more connected, and the vow of loyalty, which is this idea of everything else, that my spouse, the one whom I commit my life to, is above everything. Everything else pales in comparison. This past weekend, Julie and I went to a movie together. We were going out to see a particular movie, and we got to the theater, and those movies were canceled for the night. They had a projector problem. So we saw a different movie, which was phenomenal, by the way, on accident. In fact, it's a movie I probably would have never chosen. It just, when we looked at the board after we found out that movie wasn't showing, there's only one movie within like 75, 80 minutes of that moment. And so it was the movie Ready Player One. And some of you have read the book. You love the movie. I'm not really a sci-fi guy, so I read the description. I'm like, all right, well, let's do it. We're here. I tell you what, it was a phenomenal movie. If you have not seen this and you like technology, you need to go see this because it gives some pictures of the virtual world, you know, 50 years from now. In fact, Ready Player One is set in the year 2045, and by that point in time, they kind of depicted that the world is a pretty harsh place. And the main character, Wade Watts, he is, you know, living this kind of rough life, and the only place and the only time that he feels like he's really alive is when he enters into this virtual world known as the Oasis. And the reason he likes the Oasis is this virtual experience where he can go in and he lives a whole nother life virtually. And the reason he likes it is because in the Oasis, you can do anything, you can be anything, you can go anywhere you want to go. The only limit is your own imagination. And so the Oasis experience was created by this kind of eccentric, brilliant guy, a guy by the name of James Halliday. And he actually kind of described in the movie why he created the Oasis experience. Here's what he said. He said, "I created the Oasis because I never felt at home in the real world. I just didn't know how to connect with people there. I was afraid for all my life, right up until the day I knew my life was ending. That was when I realized that as terrifying and painful as reality can be, it also is the only place that you can get a decent meal." Because, get this phrase, reality is real. Reality is real. That's a powerful statement right there. Reality is real. All right, because the more we integrate technology into our lives, the more and more you and I live and interface with a virtual world. And there's nothing wrong with that. We just have to be aware of some of the implications of that. In fact, Dr. Tim Elmore, in his recent book, Artificial Maturity, he actually talks about, you know, how through social media and virtual reality, we've actually created this artificial world. And by we, he's not talking you and I, he's just talking about how the world around us has created the sense of we interface on a regular basis with things that are virtual and aren't necessarily real life. And we have to discern between the two. And so he kind of describes how we interface with this on a regular basis. He gives us a number of mediums. I'll show them to you real quick. He says, number one, we explore virtual reality through video games. If you're a gamer, I mean, you're living regularly in virtual reality. In fact, the biggest, you know, video game right now to hit the scene, my son's playing it every weekend. It's called what? Fortnite, yeah. I mean, it's like you can choose an avatar and it looks nothing like you, and you can have a persona and be whoever you want to be, and you can play with people you know and interface with people you don't know. The next thing he says is we make virtual connections with the internet, meaning we have friends through the internet that we've never met in person. Right, we're only known them virtually. In fact, just this past week, I was having a conversation with a couple that said, "Hey, this past week we actually met our internet friends for the very first time in real life." Because they made friends online and they actually got together and get this, played board games. Go figure. All right, you know, something connective. It's pretty cool. And then number three, we experience virtual relationships through social media. Things like Instagram, Facebook, you know, things like Snapchat and Twitter. And some of you might be going, "Well, no, those aren't virtual, those are real. I mean, these are like my real life relationships I interface with through these mediums." I mean, yes, to some degree, but also no. They're virtual. And what I mean by that is, you know, social media platforms are awesome. I mean, awesome. I mean, we can stay connected to people that we used to live near, or family members that have moved to the other part of the country or another part of the world, and we can stay connected through, you know, social mediums. I mean, that's very cool stuff. But see, here's where reality gets a bit artificial. Okay, see, all of these platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, and the Vine, all these different things that we use, see, you don't get to see the whole person on the other end. They don't get to see the whole you. That they really only get to see the edited version of you, right? Because see, you only let them see what you want them to see through these mediums. There's this really powerful point or moment in Ready Player One where Wade Watts, the main character, begins to like this kind of the chick avatar in the movie, and her name, real name, is Samantha. And so he at one point in the virtual, you know, experience says, "Hey, I want to tell you who I am." And he starts to tell her his name, and she's like, "You can't do that." And he's like, "Well, I want to." And she's like, "Well, you can't. You know, they're only supposed to know each other by their avatars." And he says, "Well, I want to tell you because I like you." And she says, "Well, you can't like me." He says, "Well, I do like you." And they have this back and forth. She's like, "Well, you can't like me." And he's like, "Well, why not?" She says, "You can't like me because you don't know who I am. You only know who I've allowed you to see." Like, wow. I mean, that's the life in virtual reality, right? In the virtual world, social media world, you know, video gaming world, internet world. I mean, we only know the other people based on what they've allowed us to see. And again, these are okay. There's nothing wrong with this. It's just, I just want us to kind of begin to comprehend how much virtual reality we engage with on a regular basis. In fact, in Dr. Elmer's research, I want to show you the five things he calls the price of social media. And I want us to think about what these mean for us, all right? And as we look at these, I want you to think about what this looks like in terms of your relationships, and not just your everyday relationships, but specifically your marriage or your romantic relationship or your dating relationship, or if you one day hope to be married, what will this look like in terms of that relationship, all right? Your future us. And again, incredible things happen through social media. I mean, we can give charitably through social media. We stay connected to people. We can get updates instantly. I can know what the traffic is on I-69 when I leave my driveway. I mean, I love all these benefits. Marvelous, marvelous things happen. There's just certain things that we didn't know and we're still discovering in terms of what the price tag is, specifically on our deeper connections, our intimate relationships, through how much virtual reality is integrated into our lives. So Dr. Elmore gives 5 research-based realities. He calls them the price of social media. And he kind of gears this. He says this is really geared more toward the younger generation. But here's what I would say. If you own a smart device, then this applies to you. All right. The only reason he gears it toward the younger generation is because everybody owns a smart device in the younger generation. But just as an example of this, we had a prom party. My daughter went to the prom last weekend, and as we went, you know, to her date's house, and we're with the other couples they were going with, all the family, a bunch of the families are taking photos. And when they kind of left, you know, everybody kind of dissipated, and the young kids went to like right to their devices. Isn't that great? I think that's a cool picture that the grandparents in the room were like on, they're like tech savvy. How cool is that? But this photo was snapped because it's kind of humorous that immediately here they are. You know, take the devices out. They look just like the Removed series, right? On their devices. And so the point of this is if you own a smart device, this applies to you, all right? So the first letter, the first kind of price of social media is one, it gives us a personal platform, all right? So social media gives us a personal platform. If you're on social media, you can build your personal platform or platforms, you know, plural. Do you realize that among internet users across the board, internet users have an average of 7.6 personal platforms? Sometimes they're multiple platforms, multiple apps. Sometimes it's multiple profiles within one platform, which means you can have a real profile and then you can have a fake profile because you want to do certain things, interact with certain ways where you don't want anybody to know who you are. But see, one of the unintended consequences, this is all cool, by the way, but one of the unintended consequences of this is it can foster a narcissistic culture. In fact, much of the research today is showing that there's a direct relationship between an increase in narcissism in our culture and an increase in social media use. See, narcissism escalated, especially in 22-year-olds and below, but it's actually escalated in 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, and much of it's tied to social media because I have a personal platform where everything can be about me. And so there's some good things we see, but there's also some not-so-good things. The letter R is reactionary opinions. So we all probably agree that social media gives us a chance to react to things, right? I mean, if you don't believe me, then just look at the last presidential election, right? We're still reacting on social media, right? Now, this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but one of the unexpected or unintended consequences is that we are more and more seeing an obsession with other people's judgments. And this isn't just among the junior high population or the senior high, even the college population. This is among all the population. In fact, I was at the mall last weekend. And the physical mall, by the way, not the virtual mall. I was like at the brick and mortar, you know, checkout with somebody in front of you mall. And I was buying something and, you know, I was just making small talk with the lady checking me out. She's probably in her mid-30s, I'm guessing. And I said, hey, how's your day going? And she said, okay. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound very convincing. She said, yeah, you know, the last 2 days I've posted on social media, I've only got about 20 likes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like she's, her day is totally ruined because nobody's liked her photo. And that means we're obsessed with other people's reactions, right? And we can react to things, but this begins driving our whole persona. I mean, you'd be sitting with your significant other and all of a sudden you're like, oh, nobody's liking my post. And all of a sudden you're feeling down in the dumps and it totally interrupts any moment of connection you have because you're all down on yourself, right? Third one, I is for instant updates. Social media offers the platform for instant updates, right? We don't have to wait a minute, right? I mean, you know what's going on in Syria 30 seconds ago, in Korea, the latest happenings. You can get weather, sports, traffic, anything you've put in your feed. I mean, you get regular messages on what's happening. And yet what research is showing us is that this constant kind of inflow of instant updates is actually creating a very impulsive culture. Right? We have impulsive behaviors. It's actually tied to this kind of knee-jerk, you know, constant Google reflex where we kind of have this constant need. I need to know exactly what's going on. I need to know more what's going on. I always got to be in the loop. I can never be out of the loop, which leads to the fourth one, the letter C. Social media offers constant information. Constant information. Here's what constant information does. In fact, Pew Research and other, you know, research groups have all found very similar things, that the unintended consequence of constant information coming into your life and my life is an increase in anxiety and depression. In fact, I read an article recently. It caused us to cut our kids' use of video games and social media back to 2 hours a day, because it said anybody that uses social media or video gaming more than 2 hours a day, their increase in anxiety and depression goes up 40%. 40%. In fact, mental health is you know, issues are running rampant among 22-year-olds and younger. Why 22-year-olds and younger? Because they're immersed in social media. But see, for any of us that have a regular flow of social media and virtual reality, depression, anxiety is on the rise. Why is this? It's because, see, you can think, man, I had a good day, and then you see somebody else's highlight reel. You don't see the whole life on Facebook. You just see their great moment. They may have been kicking the dog, and their kids were crying all day, and then they're like, hey, we had a great day. Smile, snap, and that you get the five-second glory moment, and you think, oh, my life sucks. Man, my marriage is in the tank. You know, look how great her husband was or his husband was, because you just see the highlight reel, and it actually depresses us. In fact, growingleaders.com says 94% of college students say the top word to describe their life is the word overwhelmed. Just think to yourself, you don't have to raise your hand or anything, but how many of us would say one of the top words to define my life right now is overwhelmed? About half say they're so overwhelmed it's almost difficult to function, and nearly 1 in 10 have considered suicide in the last year. See, one of the things we're discovering is that this constant data influx. You receive over 1,000 messages a day through text, email, pushes into your phone, banner ads that come up. I mean, all these things. And if we are not aware of the way that those are impacting us, it leads to a sense of angst. And that actually leads to anxiety and depression. And honestly, it isn't good for intimacy. Fifth thing, social media provides external stimulation. And we've all experienced this, right? I mean, you've all been out to dinner or in a meeting with friends or people at the office, and everybody's got their phones on the table, and one dings, and what's everybody do? They reach for their phone, and they're like, looking, and somebody's still talking, and you're buried in your phone now, and you're just going, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. You have no sense of what they're saying at all, because you're so enamored with what just dinged in. Or you might be in a conversation with your spouse and, you know, an alert on Facebook comes in and all of a sudden you're headfirst into your phone. Or you might be, you know, laying in bed together and just connecting on the day, and all of a sudden somebody posts something on Instagram and this just kind of brings up a conversation that you're frustrated with, and all of a sudden you're getting all emotionally connected. I can't believe she said that, and, you know, I need to respond. And before long, what started as an intimate moment just got blown out of that moment because of something that created angst, because we're always available and always connected. And so the unintended consequence that we're seeing with this kind of external stimulation we constantly have is it's cultivating addictive lifestyles, specifically with technology. And see, all these things, these five things, you know, cause us to begin to disengage from the people that matter the most to us. So, what do we do with this? Where do we go with this? We're going to have to wrestle through this, right? There's no easy answer on this. I just want us to see, as we think about the relationships that matter the most, all right, we've got to be aware of how technology is a way of impeding in and robbing us of the deeper connection we long for. Remember, Jesus, all right, the writer of Genesis said this, but then Jesus reiterated. He said, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave or hold fast to his wife, and wives to your husbands. Did you know, though, that 90% of text messages are answered within 30 seconds? Every text message that goes out, 90% of them are answered within 30 seconds. You know what this means? It means that we're always on. It means you're always available. It means I'm always available. It means when I'm at the dinner table, I'm available. When I'm sitting on the couch with my kids, I'm available. When I'm, you know, laying in bed with my wife, I'm available. That it communicates that this, I mean, Jesus says, cleave to your spouse. It says, this is what I hold fast to. Which, by the way, just as a side, you know, this is like a public service announcement. You know, those of you who still like to wear the Bluetooth earpieces, you know, like when you're out in public, and it's escalated with the EarPod, you know, coming back on the scene. Especially when you guys, like, when you like to wear that when you're with your wife, you know what that says when you're, like, walking at the mall and you've got that thing in your ear? It means that or this is more important than she is. That's what it means. And it also means that you're a dork, just in case you're wondering. All right, and I I know you might find this offensive, but it also tells me you don't have any real friends that are willing to tell you how stupid it looks, all right? Like, it never was cool. It isn't cool. It was like wearing a belt with sweatpants, all right? It was never in. It never was cool. So here's what you need to do, all right? You need to take that Bluetooth out, and you need to put it in your fanny pack, and then all will be well, all right? Just put it away. Just trying to help you out. Back to Jesus. Jesus says, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast, not to his device. A woman shall hold fast to their spouse, to his spouse. Let me ask you a question. Here's a question I want us to wrestle with. For those of you who are married, I want you to directly answer this. For those of you who aren't married, who are single, who are dating, who one day hope to be married, I want you to think about this question for when you get to that point. When you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you want to touch? Or when you go to bed at night with your husband or with your wife, what's the last thing you want to touch before you fall asleep? How would you answer that? Because so often it looks more like this. And see, we have people all the time, they'll be like, yeah, we're struggling in intimacy, struggling in our marriage, you know, and I'm like, digging in a little bit, and it's like, man, you're connected to everybody all the time. You can't foster intimacy when you're available to the world. Are we willing to say, okay, how do I make some decisions to put aside some of my connectivity so that I can actually connect deeply with those who matter the most? And so I want to walk us through a few next steps. They're on the back of your connection card, and these are going to be different. Our next step this week is going to be different for every single one of us. But I want you to think through these, and maybe your next step's not on this card. We're just trying to feed you a few that are some possible things. And if you're married, I want you to think through, what does this look like for my marriage? What does this look like even for my family, my kids? If you're not married, I want you to think about, what does this look like for the most significant relationship I have, whether it's with my kids, grandkids, friends, partner, whatever that is. And so, you know, here's some of the steps. You know, maybe it's saying we're going to identify a device-free time so we can just foster greater connection in our home. We're going to set aside the dinner hour and the 2 hours around that every night. So one of the things we do, we make all devices go to the docking channel or the docking station during that time. All right, just so we can focus on the people most important. In fact, the other night, Julie and I actually turned our phones upside down so we couldn't see what was coming in, because we'd both had stressful days and things were kind of flying in, questions needing to be answered, and we were like, we're just disconnecting for a bit. We'll disconnect from our devices and technology. Get this, for 1 hour before bed, or if you really want to be bold, try 2 hours or 3 hours. Before I go to bed, I'm going to begin to unwind my mind, not having to process everything that's coming from the outside world, so I can focus on the relationship or relationships that are most important. Or here's an even bolder one. How about we start docking our phones outside our bedroom? You might say, well, that's my alarm. Okay, do you want that to be the first thing you touch when you wake up? Do you want that to be the last thing you touch before you go to sleep? I'm not saying you have to do these. I'm just trying to give you some ideas. What does it look like for you this week to foster deeper connection? All right, maybe it's just returning next week. I mean, maybe you're here for the first time. You're like, oh, I'll come back. That'd be awesome. We just love when people come back for a second time. But I want us to think through, what would it look like this week for us to set aside some technology in hopes of developing deeper connection? A couple months ago, it was late afternoon. I was home with the kids. I was getting ready to head to a meeting. Julie was on her way home. Kids were just all over each other, being mean to each other, rude. I mean, they were sitting there pretty much like this on the couch, you know, video games. Every time somebody'd say something to the other one, they're like, leave me alone. What are you asking me that for? You know, because that's what we do. We're on social media. We're like, leave me alone, because this is so important. And I got so frustrated with it. I'm like, you're done. Everybody's done. This started our device-free evenings. I said, all devices to the docking station. You're done. Of course, they went up, and they're whining, and oh, I can't talk to my friends, and so-and-so needs to hear from you. You know, they're going on and on. My wife walks in about that moment. She's like, oh, wow, what's going on? And I'm like, well, I just banned devices for the night. They're on the docking station, and by the way, I got to go. They're yours for the night. So, you know, which I didn't plan it that way. It's just the way it happened. So I went to my meeting. I came home a few hours later. It's probably about 8:39, and I walked into the house, kind of forgot about all that when I left. When I walked back in, the first thing I hear is, oh, no, 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 no. I hear this whining upstairs, and the blood is boiling at that point. I'm like, oh my word, they've been complaining for 2.5 hours? Are you serious? So I'm marching upstairs, I'm ready to like lay into whoever's doing this, like seriously, and I walk, they're in my bedroom, laying in my bed, and I walk in, and I'm about ready to lay into them, and I see my oldest and youngest daughter laying on the bed with a piggy and elephant book. And they're actually acting it out. Piggy said, da, 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 and then elephant said, da, 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 da. And I'm like, oh my word, this is exactly what we're going for right here. And so I just watched them for a bit. And then they went to bed not too long after that. And I said to my wife, after everybody was in bed, I said, how long did it take after I left before they quit complaining? She said, oh, only about 10 or 15 minutes. And then what you saw began taking place. They're actually connecting together. See, it doesn't take long when we put devices aside. And so I want us to think, what does that look like this week? All right, and I can't guarantee it's going to fix your marriage. Can't guarantee it's going to, make everything up and to the right. But I can guarantee you that you will put yourself in a position to experience deeper connection this week. All right, let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this morning. God, we thank you that you long for the deeper connection with us. And God, that you went to hell and back to break down the wall so that we could have a deeper intimacy. God, help us to be able to identify this, as a result of being here today, what we need to do this week, where technology may be impeding into our intimate relationships. And Father, I just pray that you help us to know what to do with what we've heard. And give us the courage to walk it out. God, as integrated as we are and as important as technology is in our lives and work and so on, God, help us to also be able to identify times to disconnect and lean into the relationships that we've committed to. And to make our spouses, first, where everything else pales in comparison. And to make our significant relationships first, where everything else pales in comparison. And God, may we begin to experience in that moment the intimacy and the deeper connection that you long for every single one of us to have. And so God, just help us to know how we can break those walls down this week. And I pray these things according to your name, Jesus, and your power. Amen. Amen. All right, let's stand. We're going to sing one more song. And this song actually talks about how God, breaks these walls down with us and awakens us. And I pray that that happens for us this week. Let's sing.